Welcome to Report Out's Hidden Voices podcasts from around the globe. Report Out is a human rights research organisation and charity based in the UK. Report Out monitors, researches and documents the lived experiences of sexual and gender minority people and their communities in different nation states. We use this information to educate others on the lived experiences of sexual and gender minorities and to campaign and push for social change across the globe. You may notice that we use the term SOGSC, which means sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, and sex characteristics. Why do this? Because it's a culturally sensitive umbrella term to cover all sexual and gender minorities. These interviews will consist of SOGSC individuals who live in different nation states, and whilst we'll be discussing the barriers that they face, we will also highlight how they find resistance to them. Welcome to our Hidden Voices podcasts.
Hello, Danielle. Thank you for joining us to this podcast with Report Out. Could you please start by introducing yourself? Sorry.
Yes, thanks for the invitation. My name is Daniel Villatoro. I'm based in Guatemala. I live in Guatemala, and I work here in Visibles, an LGBT organization that I co-founded 3 or 4 years ago with some other LGBTI friends. And now I'm currently the executive director of this organization, and I'm a journalist by profession, and we work in different projects related to have more rights for LGBTI people here in our country.
Wow, that's great. And what are you doing with the Visibles? What type of help do you offer to the members of the community?
Yeah, we work mainly in 4 areas of work. We do a lot of educational and training work. We have classes in the public university of the state. We also give classes to some companies and to other NGOs and social movements that want to learn and understand better inclusion and understand sexual diversity, gender identity, you know, gender expression, and all the spectrum of identity and gender. And we also do research. We at times have conducted research related. We have 3 big investigations published, one related to the violence and the experiences of violence by LGBTI people in our country. The other one is the same topic, but it's more about understanding the scope and where this violence is occurring, who are the perpetrators, and what are the experiences of the different shades of violence that LGBTI people live. And the other one is related to economic opportunities, how LGBTI people are, you know, discriminated or are not as able to live freely and because of the labor and work discrimination or hide their identity to be employed. So research is another part of our work. We also do, you know, activism. We try to stay up to date to what's going on in our institutions, try to talk with those institutions to have a better, you know, public system and related to justice, to security, and education, etc. And we also have the biggest part that we call community. You know, this is compounded by cultural events, exchange opportunities, you know, building and crafting and being there for the community, you know, making so people can feel like part of Visibles, you know, they can be visible too. That's the work that we do.
That's a lot. That's amazing. Can I come back to talk about yourself? I'll go back after to your work with Visible. So did you grow up in Guatemala? Yeah, is that correct?
Yes, I grew up here. I'm currently in the main city, you know, in the capital city of Guatemala City.
Okay.
But I grew up in a smaller town. And yes, I grew up, you know, all the growing pains of growing as a gay person in a small town. But yes, I'm from here.
Did you have any support from your friends and family?
Any what?
Any support from your friend and family?
Well, I currently have, you know, some sort of support from my family, you know, like some of my family members are supportive, but in general, Guatemala is a society that's really closeted. It's not that common to have, you know, formal or verbal support. At times, you just don't get, you know, formal or really verbal discrimination or hate speech. But it's not, you know, there's this policy about silence and, you know, about not being totally out. That's really common. So that's the usual experience. And that was the experience for me. For example, I do believe that moving out from my home and, you know, going to a bigger city was a goal for me because I understood that in those contexts, it was harder to be a gay and out person. And now I live, you know, in a space that I feel more tolerated or respected at times. Not that celebrated or, you know, but it's better. And we understand that there are smaller contexts that can be harder for LGBTI youth. And that's part of the reason why we have such a strong focus on learning, because at the end, hate is something that we learn to receive and we learn to give. And a lot of the rejection against LGBTI people is, you know, based on misinformation, based on myths, based on, you know, prejudice and things that were told by someone, you know, with no scientific, social, or any kind of evidence or base, you know. It's just myths. And people are afraid of us. And it's really challenging to be an LGBTI person, you know, growing up. So that's also part of our identity. We also address youth a lot. We think we're thriving, and we believe that in the future, like, if you invest in the generations, you know, we've seen how in the last 10 years, this landscape in this country has changed a lot for LGBTI people. And we believe that the next 10 years will be better. And that's the work that we're striving to.
I believe that they were the Mayan, in Guatemala, yeah, is that correct?
Yeah, Guatemala is a multicultural country. We have Mayans, which are, you know, the largest original indigenous population from here. And Mayans, you know, are composed by 20 plus different languages and populations. And we also have Xincas and Garifunas, you know, African or from people that came from Africa and historically, you know, black communities.
Yeah.
The really mixed with, you know, all the story of colonization that our country has.
And do you know what was the view on LGBT people, like the Mayan?
Yeah, it's interesting. You see that there's really not a formal view because each community is different. But what you see is that there are, you know, at times there is fear. There's also misinformation, you know, and prejudice, but it's really different from communities to communities. In general, you cannot, in a way, pretend to generalize about all the spaces, but you see that in general, gender non-conforming people find hard times, but we also seen really interesting places where there's, you know, tolerance or even views, different views about it. But for example, you see a lot of the indigenous, the mix of the discrimination for being indigenous and also for being LGBTI, that is a part of the findings that we talk a lot of in the research that we conducted, you know, it's different, you know, intersectionality really shows how there are different layers to the reaction that people can have because of different identity factors. And it's really, it really is a struggle for a lot of indigenous people to identify as LGBTI, because there's also these social constructions. For example, in Guatemala, here we don't have that much, you know, local culture or popular culture. Yep. So these things at times are seen, you know, as you know, influence from outside. You also see with the terms and the language. For example, I was doing research with one of the towns more near to Mexico.
Yes.
And the word for the insult that people use for gay people became the word in that Mayan language for gay people, because you don't have those words. You, like, there's not even existence, you know, in the vocabulary of some of the languages. So it's really interesting to see how these mix and how these layers of discrimination, and also about, you know, ignorance, because even if you are gay, you don't born knowing what gay is. For example, I remember that when I grew up in a small town, mm-hmm. and in that small town, people called gay to what we now will call, you know, a trans woman.
Oh, right, yes, they don't know the distinction.
Yeah. And I grew up, you know, like I until I changed my environment, until I learned more, I realized that I actually was gay. But in where I live, they call gay to trans woman, and I was
of
like, I was, you know, I'm cisgender, so I don't, yes. I didn't feel trans. So I was like, I'm not gay all the time. And now,
yes,
you, with information, you know, with understanding, I understood that I am gay, and education was for me the path to knowledge and to understand myself, accept myself. And that's why we are investing and working a lot with communities around educational programs. And it's impressive. For example, we do this simple questionnaire. And this simple question, we ask people if they have one time, for example, doing, you know, exams about the composition of their hormones or a lot of the parts of their body, you know, their anatomy.
Yes. Yes.
Just to talk about that gender is just not your genitalia. People tell you, I don't know. And you tell them you could be intersex, but you don't know it, you know, or.
Yes.
Do you know what gender identity is? Of course, when you don't question your gender identity, you think that cisgender is the norm and that everybody is cisgender. So understanding that when people, like, you see the faces of the people when they have knowledge that changed their point of view, and that's really transformative.
Wow, which is a great thing that that you're doing some educational work like that. People can be more aware of the difference between being a gay person and transgender person or the rest of the community. That's great. And
yes.
How do people react to when you go and you teach them this, you educate them on the different, on all the spectrum that there is in our community? Are they surprised that because they didn't know, or do you feel that they challenge you, or what type of feedback do you get?
Well, we get different feedback. We usually what we get is nobody explained this to us. And when you explain it to me, I understand.
That's,
you know,
great.
Like, and I also understand that at times we as LGBTI people, we don't feel like explaining us all the time. And it can be really harsh and really tiresome to, you know, be being explaining ourselves all the time, because it's, you know, that's violence to, you know, mm-hmm. to pretend that we have to explain ourselves all the time. But we have gotten that reaction. Another reaction that is really interesting, for example, we have also been in workshops where people are like, oh, maybe I can identify myself in this, you know. I just it was never explained to me this way. And we have seen that, you know, with gender non-conforming people, also with girls or people really young, you know, feeling more comfortable as lesbians or as bisexuals. And, you know, by understanding it, like understanding that their attraction and their orientation is not, you know, it's not bad. So they feel that they're more allowed to engage or to, you know, they give themselves the opportunity to accept those things that they were hiding in a way. And the other thing that we have gotten is the quest or the request for more. There's not enough, and you know, when you learn the basics, you want to go further, and at times there are not enough spaces to really go profoundly and understand. For example, I had, as a gay person to leading an LGBTI organization, to learn about a lot about trans people, and I learned it not just by reading or, you know, studying it. I learned it also by talking to trans people, friends. And that's the main in learning, you know? Like, when you notice that you at times are not aware that you're, even without an intention, excluding or pretending that everybody is cisgender. So these kind of things are really, you know, general. And the other really amazing thing, and that is our main challenge, but I also always point it out as our main characteristic, is that because of the context of our countries, usually here you see organizations or social movements, you know, related just about one identity. You know, you see trans women being together, creating an association. You see gay males getting together and creating an association, you know?
Yes.
And even though we at times talk about the LGBTI community, you at times don't see all that these identities talking to each other and, you know, collaborating, understanding each other. And then visibilis has, you know, trans men, has lesbian women, has people that identify as demisexual or asexual or bisexual people. And you see that all these identities, they have, you know, their own point of view,
exactly,
as identities, but also each person, you know, you cannot say that there's a way to be gay and there's different ways to be in trans, etc. So it's really interesting that communal, that group effort to really being an LGBTI group. So it's part of the main challenge, part of the greater dynamic within the group that founded, and it's part of the work that we do, you know.
That's amazing.
There was a lot of work, you know, related to health and HIV. Yes. And that's usually work that's, you know, specific or that's more, it supports more certain communities, you know.
Yes.
And we see it socially. You don't see that much support for lesbian people or for bisexual people. You don't see an association of bisexual persons. So in that communal effort to have that dialogue and that exchange of points of view, visibilis is stronger in that sense. And it's really, you know, challenging, but it's part of the reason that we exist.
No, that's really amazing. And I, you were mentioning as well that you were doing some researches and somewhere about violences. Is that what you said? Yeah, that you.
Yeah, we actually have. Yeah.
Sorry, no, go on.
Yes, we have. You know, we have had the opportunity to have different research projects. I haven't been the lead of those projects, but I've been the editor. I'm the director of visibilis, and even though at times, you know, are things that are really temporal, research is an area that we cannot say that we always have a group of researchers working with us, because it's really difficult to have, you know, these really long periods of time people just working on understanding more. But it's really being interesting, and I think that that's something that's really different from point of view, is that it's LGBTI people and an LGBTI organization. We are leading the research about us, you know. We don't want the others or people seeing us as, you know, the others leading the research. So we did one that's in English will be called Violence Against LGBTI Population.
Yes.
Dynamics and quotidian, I don't know, everyday situations that hold it together,
yeah.
You know, that funded. So that this investigation analyzes violence by prejudice, you know, and it's more theoretical and it goes really deep, talking about, you know, the triangle of violence, you know, violence and prejudice against people. So this was really about the concepts. So then we did a big research, the biggest online research that has been done here related LGBTI issues. And we asked people, you know, specifically like, okay, we identify violence, for example, in the educational community. Who was the perpetrator of that violence? Were your classmates? Was your teacher? Was the director? Were your parents? Was the, you know, how, because we always say like we experience violence in a school, but who are the perpetrators of that violence? And in that sense, we just published this last month. So it was really interesting to see, you know, all the data that we collected and try to analyze it and make, you know, a really interesting case. So we had 290 participants. 7% of them were trans and 93% of them were cisgender.
Yes.
And we just thought that we found that most of trans people, you know, experience violence and discrimination, you know, in the last year. But when you see that bisexual people, gay people, pansexual and lesbian people experience different ways of violence. So it was really interesting, you know, to ask about this violence, but differentiate, you know, the experience of a bisexual cisgender woman from, you know, a gender non-conforming person, you know, for example.
Definitely. And do you feel safe yourself to be open about your sexual orientation?
I have the privilege of, you know, living in a city where the violence is, you know, less direct.
Okay.
And I also work in a social, you know, in human rights, in social movements. I was a journalist. I am still doing journalistic work, and I do a lot of training to media related LGBTI people. In fact, I have a program that trains people from Mexico to Honduras in these topics. So I feel really comfortable, but I understand that a lot of people don't feel that comfortable. And since I've been a director, I feel more exposed. And I understand, you know, the harshness of the world against, you know, identify yourself. I think that there are ways that you can live more freely, but you always have that sort of fear, and you know that there are things that you have to kind of like suck it up, you know?
Sure.
Just go with it. It's hard, but at times it's the survival mode that we are engaged in this complex society. And specifically, for example, you don't see a lot when you don't see a lot of violence here in Guatemala, is because there's a lot of silence, you know. So we have to hide ourselves.
Yes.
And, you know, pretend that we're not express ourselves freely to not being victims of violence. So I have the privilege that in the context and the sector where I work, it is not as hard. For example, supposedly journalism is a really, you know, a more open field, a more human and human rights led,
yes,
field of work. But even though I felt exposed at times as a journalist, or I, you know, heteronormativity, machismo, you know, like,
yes,
patriarchy, all these things add up, and the system in itself, even those spaces that you think that will be better or are not as bad, which is true, you find, you know, some sort of homophobia or just ignorance, you know. At times it's not really a reaction against, it's just the fear of the unknown.
And do you get any help from the government?
The situation in Guatemala from public authorities is really tricky. There's really not one office that addresses LGBTI people specifically or openly. Some of them, specifically in justice and security topics, have, you know, some sort of small programs, or, you know, do have a little bit of attention to LGBTI people. But we have the ombudsman here, you know, the human rights prosecutor that you know, it's independent from the authorities, and his job is to be aware and, you know, pointing out the problems that authorities themselves are doing.
Yeah.
Has a LGBTI defensorship, a small office dedicated to defend LGBTI people. So that's helpful. But, you know, the state, Congress, the judiciary system, and also the executive system, you know, presidency, we do not have that much support or that much engagement in LGBTI, addressing LGBTI issues.
Oh, wow. And is there any, like, events, like LGBT-friendly events, any festivals or type of pride or stuff like that, happening in
Guatemala? We have had pride last year we had the 19th celebration of pride here in Guatemala.
Excellent.
19 years. Because of social distance, you know, the events are smaller, but for example, in Visibles, we have a really cool group that's called our book club. We have had that for 3 years, and it's really amazing to see all the community get together to read LGBTI fiction. We also had, you know, a talk show that was monthly that we had to suspend due to the pandemic, but we're trying to come up with ways to have it more regularly this year on the web. And we also are the producers of the Central American LGBTI Rights Forum. We had it on the second week of December last year. So it was really interesting. We had more than 200 people from Central America talking about LGBTI issues, addressing the issues that we have. We also had a media and reporting and narrative section, you know, workspaces for certain issues, networking, some concerts, and, you know, more joyous things. So we're really proud of that event, because we believe that as a region we need to be better in addressing LGBTI issues.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. And excuse me. I find it amazing. Well, all the things that you're doing in Guatemala, that's amazing. You're doing a great work. You were talking about the coronavirus. We've seen that our community, LGBTQIA+, has been hit the hardest during the lockdown. Was it the same as well in Guatemala?
Yes, you see different, you know, differences in how LGBT people were affected. You, for example, saw a lot of LGBT people that had escaped violence settings or familiar settings where they're not accepted. They had to re-engage, you know, or come back. And we, for example, have had calls with people that tell us, like, I cannot talk. I'm just going to be chatting because I'm at my home with my parents now, and I cannot be freely me here.
Yeah.
And also, specifically, you know, your LGBT people that are not, you know, don't find jobs because of the discrimination. You see a lot of trans women, you know, that, for example, there's a lot of trans women here that engage in sexual work as the only means they have, because of the laboral discrimination. So it was really tough. We had a small support program for 70 people that included some food and some hygiene supplies, you know, for the lockdown. And we did a poll with them. They were mostly trans women that did sexual work, that were sex workers, and, you know, sellers on the street that were lesbians. And we found that really harsh stories, you know, and the social programs here to address that at times didn't attend and didn't see LGBTI people as, you know, part of the population or part of the affected. So that's the problem, you know, when you don't have a specific, or you don't address LGBTI people as people, when in a time when everybody got in need, or a lot of the people in Guatemala have suffered, if LGBTI people are not seen as people or are not counted, you know, in the programs of support, in the small opportunities, you know, to thrive, it's going to be small. And we also saw a lot of hate crimes. It was incredible to see that even though we were at times at lockdown, you know, like formal lockdowns where people couldn't leave their houses from 4 p.m. to 4 a.m. next day, trans women, a gay couple, and we had a lot of hate crimes during lockdown. So it's really worrying, the situation in general related to violence.
Is the that well? That's unfortunate. But yeah, we've noticed there's a lot of issue, and especially towards our community during this lockdown. Unfortunately, is there any like media in Guatemala, like magazine or even a TV show, things like that, like LGBT friendly?
Some of them are, you know, address LGBTI issues. For example, I work as a trainer in an LGBTI reporting initiative. So I train, and I'm a journalist. So that's really my field of expertise. So yeah, you see some sort of, you know, openness, but you don't see, you see a small media led by LGBTI people. We're actually in the process of founding and launching a magazine, an LGBTI magazine.
Oh, wow.
In this month we will be launching a cultural LGBTI magazine. So you see a small hope, but you don't see it that much, and you don't see general or, you know, mainstream media addressing it that much. When they address it, they're really cautious. So what we have done is trying to engage with journalists, trying to talk to them, and also have our own production. A lot of the news and the things that people like telling LGBTI people follow us, we'll be producing, you know, these learning documents, but we will be also talking to you about what the Congress is doing related ourselves, or what the authorities are talking when a congresswoman is talking bad about LGBTI people, or when there's a measure that can be approved that will affect us. Engage with us, we're going to tell you this point of view.
And what is going to be the name of the magazine?
It's called Impronta, which is a word here, kind of like to say a stamp, or, you know, a really specific feature of something, because we believe that all of us have, you know, these really specific traits and these really special things. So yeah, we'll be talking about LGBTI people broadly. It's kind of the translation will be imprint.
Yes.
So we will be talking about those imprints that the society has on us, but also how LGBTI people are thriving and letting their mark, you know, leaving their imprint in the world that we live in.
Is it going to be like a paper issue or online issue?
We're doing it online, and we'll have a paper version that's coming in the upcoming months. Wow. But yeah, it will be featuring the most avant-garde work by artists and community leaders here in Guatemala.
Amazing.
And Central America too.
send us the link when you publish it. Talking about Guatemala, is there like any places that you recommend to anyone visiting Guatemala? Any place that you like any bars or anything to LGBTQIA plus friendly that you recommend?
Well, it's really tricky to talk about LGBTIQ friendly spaces here.
Yeah.
Especially with the pandemic, a lot of those bars and spaces have been,
yeah, yeah,
you know, hit hard.
Yes.
But for example, I think that there's a lot of tolerance in some of the most famous touristic landmarks here. For example, there's a couple, you know, of bars that are really open in Antigua Guatemala, which is a colonial town where you see stone streets and really colonial houses, you know, from the 1800s. There's also a lot of tolerance in some of the parts around one of a lake that's surrounded by volcanoes that is called Atitlan. There's a couple of bars. We've seen even, you know, a drag friend doing, you know, a live DJ set around the lake or things like that. So
wow,
you can find really interesting options for tourism. And the other thing that I don't know about its friendliness with LGBTI population, but it's really a space to look at is, you know, to see the archaeologistic locations of Mayan heritage. You know, Tikal is the most famous one. You know,
yeah,
they shot parts of Star Wars there, and you see the Mayan pyramids there. And there's also, if you're into trekking, there's a really huge pyramid that's haven't been discovered. You know, it's still covered by dirt, but it's a 3-5 days trekking adventure. So yeah, there's a lot of things to do if you visit Guatemala.
One of my friend here in Oxford is from Panajachel. Do you know?
Oh, cool! Yeah, Panajachel is,
yeah,
is the space where I was telling you about the lake was surrounded by volcanoes and indigenous communities.
Oh.
So that mix of, you know, folklore or heritage, the beauty of water, sun, and volcanoes is really interesting to see.
Yeah, it looks like a beautiful country. Yeah, it looks really, really nice. Is there any like advice that you would for LGBTQIA plus people that you would like to give?
More than an advice, I have an advice, and also I have an offer.
Mm-hmm.
My advice is to try to own your own narrative. If you're called out by someone else, try to, instead of being those things that people told you, tell yourself who you are. I'm a journalist, I'm a writer, so that's something that I do all the time, and I've found that the biggest challenge for me, even though you see me as a director in a LGBT organization, has been, you know, owning my story. You know,
wow,
probably I didn't face, you know, I was never really, well, I was bullied in school and things like that, but I don't have, you know, the most dramatic violence story. But I lived in a really Christian community, and for me, it was heartbreaking to, you know, part away because I was rejected for being a gay. So I have to own my story, and that's what happened to me. But instead of them telling me who I am, them telling me I'm a sinner, or them telling me I'm a weird, I'm telling them I'm queer, that's beautiful. I'm, you know, I'm gay, I don't mind. But gay is such a wonderful part of who I am, but it's not all I am.
Absolutely.
And I live that, you know, and I try to project that narrative and own my narrative and don't let them call me things. Because
true.
And that's more beautiful even if you talk about pronouns or gender identity, you know.
Yes.
The
definitely.
Only one that can say who you are is you. So
yourself.
That will be my advice. And my offer of help is that I know a lot of the work that has to be done for media and from journalism. I have a lot of learning resources, specifically in Spanish. So if you're from a Spanish-speaking country and you want to engage, you know, in courses or in learning from media and LGBTI people, I have programs for that. I have, you know, videos recorded for that. Any, like, I have tons of resources on that. And this year is really thriving because I will be having more of that. So just like, if you're on Twitter, you can text me at Danny Villatoro.
How do you spell it?
D-A-N-Y, you know, the lower B, I-L-L-A-T-O-R-O.
Wow, excellent.
Or you can find me Seamless online and just check for Danny Villatoro. It's really, if you find Danny Villatoro, it's not that hard to find me online because I'm a journalist, you know? So I have a lot of things published. I cannot hide, and Google knows that I'm gay and everybody knows that I'm gay.
can you give the Visible website as well if people want to?
Of course, you just www.visibles.gt, you know, like, mm-hmm, Guatemala.
Yeah, Guatemala.
So visibles.gt, and in Twitter we are at visibles lower dash, no, yeah, mm-hmm, lower dash GT.
Sure. And Visible is V-I-S-I-B-L-E-S, yeah?
Perfect.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's the cool part about Visibles, is that in Spanish and in English it's the same word. Visibles,
oh, Visibles. In French as well. French is Visible.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
didn't know that.
Visible. Yeah, so it's great.
Oh,
you
get, perfect.
You get an international name. It's great.
Best naming branding ever.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you very much for taking part to this podcast, and thank you for your work, because it's you're doing an amazing work, and we send us your magazine, or keep in touch with us, and we'll always help you and repost, and even just for us personally, it will be really interesting to see to read your magazine and to learn more about what's going on in Guatemala.
Of course, thanks for having me here. I think that this podcast and any other initiative that people can engage in is part of that thing that I was mentioning. You know, we have to own our narratives, create our spaces, because the world is not going to provide them. We are going to create them.
Yes, and we have the tools now to do that. So yeah, let's use all the tools that we have now to our disposition. Absolutely. Thank you very much, Daniel. Thank you so much. That was amazing. So, such a great story. Thank you for being here and for your help and for all the work you're doing.
Speak a big hug to everybody that listened to us.
Speak to you soon. Thank you, Daniel.
If you would like to get involved with the work of Report Out, please visit our main website at www.reportout.org, where you can subscribe to our regular email distribution list, which allows you to get exclusive access to our latest and exciting news, blogs, and projects. You can even donate to us to ensure that our work continues. We're also on all social media platforms, so please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn for regular updates on SOGSC human rights across the globe. Lastly, Report Out would like to give a huge thanks to all of our podcast interviewees and listeners for their valuable time and support. Your voices are no longer hidden, and when voices come together, they make us stronger as a movement.